my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul, and he leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
It's been a little bit since we have gone through a psalm, and these three psalms, 22, 23, and 24, go hand in hand. And so the way we've approached it so far is looking at all three of them, the cross, the crook, and the crown, as one preacher put it. The cross being Psalm 22, which is the psalm that Jesus would quote while on the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And then Psalm 23, the crook, that is the shepherd's crook, which represented a great comfort to the sheep, as the psalmist here, David, says in Psalm 23, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. This psalm shows great comfort and provision even in times of death. And then we noticed that Psalm 24, talking about the crown, is really a scene of the resurrection and the feast that will take place in heaven after the resurrection. We see that Jesus is crowned, his followers, or his sheep, if you will, are around a table awaiting his presence. And as he walks through, there is great praise, there is great feasting and celebration. And we've already considered Psalm 22, Mount Calvary. We will, Lord willing, consider Mount Zion in the future, but this evening I want us to consider the valley that's between the two mountains, the valley of the shadow of death. And in this psalm, it is probably one of the most well-known, if not the most well-known psalms, besides Psalm 1, that is out of all 150 psalms that are written, that are inspired, that we have recorded. It is one that many people will memorize, that they hold dear to their heart. It's one that people will read every single day for comfort to get through the day. And I'm very, I've been very excited to talk about Psalm 23 ever since I began the series of going through the Psalms. And one reason I've been very eager to study it and learn more about it is because one thing I love about Scripture, especially the ones that God uses their occupation to write, is that, like Luke, talking about the resurrection of Jesus the Christ, he was a doctor, physician, and he would use languages of physicians to discuss how they examined the body of Jesus the Christ, and they are eyewitnesses of these things. You read of all these different people that God uses based off of their background. And this one in particular is very, very fascinating. Because if you look at it from the standpoint of a shepherd writing this, which is exactly what's happening, David being a shepherd for many, many years of his life. In fact, it was his very first job before he became a man of blood and a great soldier and commander of an army and even a king. It's interesting how you see this mighty warrior, this battle-hardened man still have a soft spot for animals? This man that has proven himself to win hundreds and even thousands of battles and wars, he still writes poems. And in this poem, he, a shepherd, depicts himself as a sheep that he once looked after. And it's not that his shepherd was his father, Jesse. It's that the shepherd that he is discussing is the Lord. And as was read a moment ago, I love the way, not that it was read, but how it was read, the emphasis on how personal it was. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. It is a very personal, very, very personal psalm by David. In fact, it's probably one of the most personal psalms that he would ever write, because he pours all of himself into it. He discusses the relationship that he has with the Lord, and he puts everything that he knows that is shepherding into it, and describes one of the greatest relationships that we can have with God. We've gone over this outline before, this Psalm 23, God, our crook of safety and solitude. But it's been a while, so I'd like to go over this outline again with you. In verse 1, we see a good leader. A good leader. Psalm 23 and verse 1. In verse 2, you have provision. This leader is good because he provides for his sheep. Number 3, verse 3, he also shows restoration. He is a good leader because not only does he give provision, but he gives restoration. And then you also have verse 4, talking about the valley of the shadow of death. This one is right in the center of the entire psalm. And then if you look back at all three psalms are pointing to this one main idea: peace amidst turmoil. Because you've got Psalm 22 that's the mountain of turmoil, really. And then you've got Psalm 24, that is the mountain of victory, Mount Zion. And right in the middle, you have a shepherd that has experienced turmoil, and he's showing his sheep, you can have peace amidst turmoil because I beat turmoil for you. Now let me lead you to the promised land, to the tablelands, to a provision of pastures that are, it's going to be absolutely perfect for you. So just trust in your shepherd. And then you've got verse 5, readiness, table prepared, anointed, cup overflowing. A good leader, a good shepherd is ready and makes things ready for his sheep. And then verse 6 is divided into two different sections. You've got that he is not only ready, but he is a present shepherd. He's present. Goodness and mercy follow me all the days of my life. Therefore, verse 6, we have our next point and last point. Dwelling in the house of the Lord forever, a good host. A good host. Now, if you are familiar with Hebrew poetry, the psalmists love to write in different structures. And this one is in a specific structure where everything points to the center, a chiastic structure. So if you look at these points, the very first one is that he is a good leader, but the end is that he is a good host. He is a good provider, but he also provides his presence. You have that he is he gives restoration, but he also prepares. He shows readiness for his sheep. And then right in the middle, he says, you can find peace with me. Now, let's look at this psalm together. And while we read this psalm, we are going to look at it from the standpoint of a shepherd. How a shepherd in his life and experience of herding sheep and taking care of them and watching over them for many years, we're going to see exactly how David pours out himself as well as his experience as a shepherd into this psalm. Notice, The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. There's a good leader. When you read about the Lord is my shepherd, the very first line, my mind immediately goes to the book of John. John chapter 10, verses 11 through 18, where Jesus describes himself as the good shepherd. And if you look at his description of the good shepherd, we don't have time to read this entire context, but in describing the good shepherd, he says, there is the shepherd who owns his flock, and then there are hired shepherds, which are not invested in the sheep, not nearly as much as the one who owns the sheep. And so he says, I am not like the ones who are hired. I am not doing it for money. Those who do it for money, when the wolves come and the bears walk up and the lions begin to roar, they run away. I stand and fight for my sheep. I will stand and defend them because you are my sheep and I am your good shepherd. He describes the door. He says, I am the door. And in this door, imagine this corral, if you will, this encircled fence that has all the sheep in it, and that way they can't get out at night. And there's only one way in and one way out. He says some will try to come over the fence and steal the sheep and try to lead them out, but they're not going to listen to them because they know the voice of their shepherd. I don't have to hop over the fence. I am the door. I let you in and I let you out. I can call you out and you'll listen because you know my voice. That's the kind of shepherd that David is talking about here. The Lord is my shepherd. There's ownership. There is a relationship between the shepherd and his sheep. So much so that when you read about David in 1 Samuel, or rather, I believe it's 2 Samuel. I apologize, 2 Samuel. When you read about his sin with Bathsheba and everything that he's done with Bathsheba and against Uriah, it's pretty phenomenal the similarities between David and Jezebel. If you actually do a character study and put Jezebel on one piece of paper and David on the other, they are identical. The only difference is how David responds to his sin when he is confronted. Jezebel is one who is wicked and did not repent, whereas David, he repented and he had godly sorrow. Imagine stealing somebody else's spouse, getting them pregnant, and then realizing, okay, now I need to figure out a plan to get the other spouse with this person so they can think, so you're, now you're lying, thinking that it's their child. Well, then it doesn't go as planned, so now you got to get the man drunk. That doesn't work, so you end up killing him. That's what David did. And then he said, all right, I got away with it. Do you know what convinced him that he was in the wrong and that there's no way that he is going to get out of this unless God forgives him? Nathan comes up and says, David, we've got an issue. Somebody has absolutely abused a sheep. And he says, who was it? Oh, we need to take care of this right now. What happened to this sheep? Well, there was this man that had a lot of sheep, very wealthy, but he saw that another man just had one sheep. And he envied that one sheep. And so he killed the man and took the sheep for himself. David said, we are going to kill this man. This man deserves death after what he has done to this sheep. You see the relationship and the seriousness between a shepherd and his sheep. And then imagine when Nathan says, thou art the man, David. You slaughtered an innocent sheep of God. Imagine David's grief. I cannot believe I did this. Thinking from the standpoint of I just killed one of God's sheep, from a shepherd's standpoint, that's crippling for a shepherd. Now, you see the relationship that a shepherd has with his sheep and vice versa. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. So not only do you see the relationship between the sheep and the shepherd, you see why there is a relationship between the sheep and the shepherd. because the shepherd always provides the things that are needed. Notice, I shall not want. Well, how shall I not want? That's where we get into point number two, green pastures and still waters. He gives provision. My mind goes to Matthew chapter 6, when Jesus is talking to the multitude and to his apostles specifically, and he says, look, do not worry about tomorrow. The Gentiles eagerly seek after these things, food, water, shelter, clothing. God understands that you need those things. You are his sheep. He understands. He's going to provide. You're not going to want. You will have every necessary need met. All you need to do is follow after God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. The good shepherd is telling his sheep, you're not going to want. Not on my watch. Not on my watch as the good shepherd. Now look at verse 2 with me. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. If you do research on sheep, it's unless you've just worked with sheep. I've never had the privilege of working with sheep. I've worked with a few animals growing up, but never with sheep. And I've been told that they are some of the most difficult creatures ever to deal with, which I find very fascinating that God would compare us to some of the most frustrating creatures in the animal kingdom. If you look at the makeup of a sheep, due to their very makeup, it is almost impossible to force a sheep to lay down. You have to turn them over and hold their legs and make sure that they don't move around. Usually that's happening when they're shearing the sheep. They have to hold them down. And even at that point, if the sheep has a really good relationship with the shepherd, they won't struggle nearly as much. They'll just let them shear them. But due to their makeup, they don't like to be still. They always have to be moving. But with the sheep, in order for them to be still and lay down, there are four different needs that must be met. Unless they are free from all fear, unless they are free from friction with others of their kind, that is their other sheep in the flock, unless they are free of pests and they are relaxed, that is different parasites and bugs, and unless they are free from hunger, they will not stay still. They will not lay down in peace. The sheep must be completely without fear. And sheep are always looking around, wondering, okay, where are we going to go? What's out there? That's without the shepherd, there would be no sheep. They can't do anything for themselves. They always get themselves into trouble. So the shepherd has to make sure, if my sheep want to find peace and sleep, they cannot have any fear. There cannot be any fighting or friction amongst the flock. So he's got to make sure to separate them and rebuke them and discipline them as need be. He has to make sure that they are free from any kind of disease or any bugs or pests or parasites. And he has to make sure that they are fed properly. That's what David is saying. I don't have to worry about these things. I don't have to worry about fear. I don't have to worry about going hungry. I don't have to worry about things infesting my life. And I know that even though this world has a lot of friction, God is going to provide peace for me. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. When sheep get thirsty, they become restless and set out and search for water. And if they are not guided properly, they will go to the very first water source that is in front of them. It could be a pothole. It could be a ditch. It could even be overflowing sewage. As long as it's liquid, they will start drinking it because they're just thirsty. So if the shepherd does not guide them to the proper water source, guess what's going to happen to the sheep? They're going to get infected. They're going to get sick. They're going to ingest something that they should not have ingested, and then the sheep will die. David says, look, I'm just an ignorant little sheep. I wander aimlessly. I need a shepherd. And I know that the Lord is my shepherd. And because he is my shepherd, I will not want anything. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He fulfills all of my needs. He leads me beside the still waters where it's pure and clean water. Everything that I need that satisfies me. And then you've got verse 3. He restores my soul and leads me in paths of righteousness. There's restoration. Now, this one was very, very interesting. I was wondering, what does it mean from a shepherd's point of view, the cultural standpoint, if you will, for restoring, restores my soul, leads me in paths of righteousness. If you take out the spiritual aspect of that and solely look at the shepherding side of it, he restores the sheep and he leads the sheep in certain paths. If you look at sheep and studying this psalm, it must always be remembered that it is from a sheep's standpoint, talking about his shepherd. With this being said, one might even ask, okay, if David is saying that the Lord is his shepherd and all of his needs are met, why does he need to be restored? Think about it. If all of my needs are given to me, and all the necessities are provided, why do I need to be restored? Restored means to essentially be bought back or brought back. I've wandered. Something's happened. Does that mean that Jesus wasn't paying attention? That God just wasn't a good shepherd at some point? Absolutely not. Sheep wander off sometimes. And when that sheep wanders off, guess what the shepherd does? He goes out and he looks for that one sheep. The other sheep, they're good. They're staying within the flock. But that one sheep is lost, and it's not going to be able to find its way back. So the good shepherd will restore that sheep and lead it back to a path that it can then find its way back home. Now, David, understanding this, the author of this, the penman of this psalm, who was much loved by God, knew what it was. What it was to be like to fall away. Imagine, I don't know exactly when this psalm was written. We're not giving the historical timeline, if you will. But I know David was not a perfect man, even in his prime, when he was running away from King Saul. But I wonder if perhaps maybe this psalm could have been written after the sin of Bathsheba. We don't know. But knowing David and himself, he says, I wander off sometimes. I fail as a sheep, and I get myself into a lot of trouble. But I know that my good shepherd is going to restore me, and he is going to lead me back in paths of righteousness and get me back to the flock. Now, if you look at this next section, he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. You see, it's not just about the sheep anymore. It's for the sake of the shepherd. If David allowed one sheep to die, then whose fault was that? Jesse, it wouldn't be Jesse's fault. It wouldn't be the other brother's fault. And it wouldn't be the sheep's fault. Everything fell to the responsibility of the shepherd. If something happened to the sheep, it was the shepherd's responsibility to bring it back. That's why he says, for his name's sake, God gets all the glory for the restoration. Being brought back is not saying, wow, look how great of a person I am now. That's not the point of being restored. Being restored, as Paul would say, is, look, it's not I that live, but Christ that lives in me. There, he says, look, I am the worst sinner there is. I am the chief sinner. And if it wasn't for God restoring me, I don't know where I would be. But because of God's love and his grace and his mercy, because of the good shepherd, I can find peace in paths of righteousness. Now, another aspect of this idea of leading sheep in paths of righteousness, something that sheep are notorious for, are being very, very clueless when it comes to being in the pastures. What I mean by that is this. If you look at literally any other type of cattle, as they graze, even though with cows, you would have to move them to a new pasture, so this pasture they were on can kind of take a rest, if you will. Some animals naturally just move on to the next pasture because they know we've eaten all this already. We need to move on to another one, and then it naturally restores itself. Sheep will eat a pasture until it is a wasteland if they are left to their own demise. If they are not looked after at all, and they just are in the same pasture, and it can be a large pasture, they will eat the grass over and over again until it's just dirt. There's nothing else to eat. And then they're like, what are we going to do? And they just end up starving, getting all kinds of diseases, and dying. There's a book called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. And in this book, he talks about how when he just started out becoming a shepherd, looking after sheep, he said, I bought some land from this gentleman. And I actually didn't take a look at it. I just took it at his word. And after I bought it, I realized the land was a wasteland. And he asked the seller what happened, because he's got to put his sheep on this pasture. He says, well, I leased this out to a shepherd, and he just put the sheep out there and never really took care of it, and I didn't know about it. And he allowed the sheep to eat it, and it absolutely ruined the land. That's why you got a really good deal on it. And so the shepherd had to come back, take all of his sheep, and try to find somewhere else because he wasn't paying attention to his sheep. And they absolutely obliterated the pastures. David says, he leads me in paths of righteousness. He does not allow his sheep to be stagnant. He leads them to where there is always good provision. He keeps them moving forward. He doesn't look backwards. He doesn't keep them still when they need to be moving forward. You know, it's very interesting as the church, what happens when we become stagnant and we just eat the same pasture grass over and over and over again? We eventually become a barren wasteland, and we wonder, well, what happened? Well, we didn't listen to the good shepherd when he was calling us to do his will. He says, rather than being a stagnant sheep, I am a restored sheep. There is something that happens to a sheep. It's quite pitiful, actually. I forget the term that's used, but it's when a sheep, it falls over and gets on its back trying to get up, and it can't do anything, and it just starts flailing its legs and calling out for help. And it'll die that way because it doesn't know how to really get up by itself. And so the shepherd has to come over and turn it right side up and then get it back into the flock. That's really how David is describing the sheep here. When I am turned upside down and I become stagnant and I'm almost killing myself, the good shepherd takes care of me. He turns me right side up and he restores my soul and gets me back into the flock. And what's a beautiful transition is into verse 4. Peace amidst turmoil. Now, this is probably one of my favorite scenes in this entire psalm, because you have peace, tranquility, provision. It's almost like you can hear the birds chirping. You can see the blue of the sky and the clouds that's up there. You can see the sun shining, the beautiful green pastures, and the sheep are content. The shepherd is looking over his sheep with love. And then you get to verse 4, and it's gloomy, it's dark, but you still have this same feeling of love, and you're still at peace. It's very fascinating to go from a flourishing green pasture to a barren valley full of darkness and dirt and death. There's no provision, and the sheep still says, I still feel okay. I'm fine because I've got my shepherd with me. In Israel, Shepherds often move flocks through narrow ravines and valleys. And these areas contained steep cliffs, caves, robbers, wolves, lions, and bears. Oh my. And the shepherd made sure that even though it may be a very difficult path to follow, even though it may be narrow and uncomfortable, although it may seem like life is dreary right now for the sheep still trusted the shepherd enough to go through that ravine, knowing that there is danger in there, but my shepherd's going to take care of me. That's why I was able to go from a scene of great greenery and beauty and peace to darkness and death, but there's still peace. Because Psalm 22, the shepherd beat death for us. He came back to life and said, follow me. The valleys connected lower grazing grounds with higher summer pastures. And then you have, I will fear no evil, for your rod and staff, they comfort me. I never really knew this about shepherds. I always thought that they just had really one type of weapon besides a sling. I know that a lot of shepherds had slings. We read about that with David. But they also did not just have a staff, which had a crook at the top. They also had a rod. I always thought that it was kind of just David being repetitive. Your rod, your staff, it comforts me. He says, you have a rod in one hand and a staff in the other, and they both comfort me. And I was reading about what a shepherd has in protecting his sheep. The first one is the staff. The staff was longer with a curved end, used to guide sheep, pull them from danger, keep them close, direct their movement. And so with all of these sheep, this shepherd's crook would be really, really long. So if there were sheep misbehaving, he could reach in into the flock and move them around. And if there was one hanging off a cliff, he could reach down with his crook, grab it by the neck and pull it up and carry it to safety. The crook was something that showed guidance and protection. Whereas the rod, a shepherd's rod was more like a short club, almost like a thick baseball bat. It was used to fight predators, defend the flock, count the sheep, and discipline wandering sheep. So you read about King Solomon writing about in the Proverbs, the rod of discipline. This is what he's talking about. The rod of discipline, a rod that was actually used for sheep. And I've, thinking about now, I wonder, I could just see David looking at Solomon, pulling out that rod and said, I know how to use this. But you know, I wonder if we forget that Jesus has a rod as well, a rod of correction. He says, look, I know how to use this. And I'm not afraid to discipline you because I love you. Sheep are disciplined by their shepherds because the shepherds love them. They don't want them to get in trouble. They don't want them to fall off cliffs. They don't want them to fall into the mouths of lions and bears or into the hands of thieves. And so the rod speaks of God's protection, and the staff speaks of God's guidance. And then you've got verse 5, table prepared, anointed, and cup overflowing, you have readiness. A shepherd was to be ready for their sheep. He had to have the food ready. He had to have the medicine ready. He had to have their drinking water ready or mapped out. He had to have the paths mapped out. He had to have everything ready for his sheep for the following day. And if you look at just what David does for his sheep in historical archaeology and just in culture, there is something called the tablelands. We actually just sang it a moment ago, higher plain. A higher ground. I'm pressing on to higher ground by faith on hate on heaven's tablelands. That song is about really using shepherding language. And a tableland was something that was, it was almost like a hill, a mountain, but it plateaued at the top and it was flat. It was almost like a very large pasture on a pedestal. And what this, what shepherds would do is they would lead them up onto higher ground, onto the tablelands, to where it was some of the best feeding grass for the sheep. Because it was higher, not a lot of animals would get up there. It would take a lot of work for the shepherd to get the sheep up there because he knew it was the best food. However, it's going to take work, but I love my sheep enough that they're going to get the best. And so he would lead them to higher ground, to the tablelands. When you step back and look at all of the Psalms together, Psalm 22, 23, and 24. Psalm 22, you have the shepherd taking the fall for the sheep. He's being crucified. Psalm 23 is the valley of the shadow of death. He's walking through the ravine with his sheep to get to the tablelands. And the tablelands is actually Psalm 24, the great feasting scene with his sheep in heaven. And so when you look at what David is saying, he says God is going to provide the best for his sheep. And him being a shepherd, he knew how much work went in to providing for his sheep. So he knows God, nothing can overthrow God. Nothing can overpower God. So God at his best, there's no telling what he's got ready for me. You have prepared my table. You have anointed me with oil. My cup overflows because of you. And then you've got this little piece here, anointed my head with oil and my cup overflows. Shepherds commonly applied oil to the sheep. Oil helped heal wounds, repel insects, soothe irritation, and protect from disease. In the summer, flies could torment sheep so severely that they injured themselves, and oil brought relief. And usually the time that they would go to the tablelands was around summertime because that's when the grass was flourishing the most. Spring had come through, rain had come through. And so even though it was in the summertime and it was hot, the grass was beautiful. It was healthy. So to prepare them for the tablelands, he would cover their sheep. Now, it's very interesting how Jesus, our good shepherd, preparing us for our tableland, covers us, not with oil, but with his own blood. Now look at verse 6. Two thoughts here, and the lesson will be yours. Goodness and mercy follow me all the days of my life. You have presence. Now this presence can be taken two ways. A present as in a gift, or a present as in the shepherd's presence. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me. The Hebrew word here for follow carries with it to chase or to pursue. It's not just like when we think of it'll follow me, we almost think of almost like walking a dog and the dog is following you, just kind of trotting along. David says, goodness and mercy will pursue me. It's going to chase me down. I won't be able to get away from his blessings, which I find this very, very comforting and very fascinating because the gift given to the sheep are you're not going to run out of blessings, but not just you're not going to run out of blessings. The blessings are going to chase you down. What does a shepherd usually do to his sheep? Usually when they flee, he chases the sheep down. Well, who is described as goodness and mercy? Christ. Christ is our goodness and mercy. He is pursuing us. He's chasing us down. All we need to do is stop and listen to his voice and hear him say, come back home, because goodness and mercy is chasing you all the days of your life, and it will be yours. The table plains will be yours. I will cover you with oil. You will have peace. You will have everything you need if you just follow me. This is exactly what the shepherd does to his sheep. And then, finally, dwell in the house of the Lord forever. He is a good host. A good host is with his host, or is with his guests, rather. A host is not going to separate himself from his guests. And if you look at David and all the shepherds throughout history, what did they do during the night? Shepherding never stopped. You never stopped being a shepherd. You were on the clock 24/7. And so that means even at night, you had to be with the sheep. You had to watch over them at night. You had to keep one eye open and both ears aware, for even by night, the wolves may come. The bears are hungry. The lions are crouching and waiting. And so he didn't just say, all right, I'll be back in the morning, because if he did, there wouldn't be any more sheep left. Notice how he ends the psalm. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. He's not going to leave me. I'm going to be with him. He's going to be with me day and night. You can almost just see a shepherd. You could see David in the middle of the flock sleeping with his sheep. Well, that's the picture here in verse 6. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And then it goes into Psalm 24 and showing exactly what it looks like to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. At day's end, shepherds gathered sheep into a fold. The sheep rested safely under the shepherd's care, and the journey ended at home. He made sure to take them home with him. He did not leave the sheep by themselves. He did not leave them to try and fend for themselves. Like, he did something. He said, I am going to be with my sheep. When you look at Psalm 23, it is a very, very personal psalm from David. A psalm about sheep and a relationship with his shepherd, written by a shepherd, saying, God is my shepherd, the Lord is mine, and I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. And though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. You prepare my table in the midst of my enemies. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Got a question for you. Are you part of the flock of the Good Shepherd? If not, I hate to tell you this. Actually, I don't hate to tell you this. I'd love to tell you this so you can be a part of the flock. You are not receiving the blessings that come with being a part of Christ's flock. I want you to be a part of the flock. Everybody here wants you to be a part of the flock. Jesus wants you to be a part of the flock so that you can say, I shall not want. Maybe you're wanting. You have so many needs that are not being met, but it's because you've wandered off aimlessly and you're being attacked by wolves, by bears, by lions, by thieves. And you hear a voice in the background calling. You hear Jesus frantically pursuing you, but you just keep walking away from him. Don't walk away anymore. Look to the Good Shepherd. And come home. Come back to the Good Shepherd. Maybe you've never been a part of his flock. You've actually been one of the wolves or the lions or the bears or even one of the thieves. And you've been doing that for far too long, taking and devouring that which is not yours, hurting the flock of Christ. And you want to make those things right. Or maybe you are a part of the flock. You've fallen away. Or maybe you are a part of the flock and you see bears. You see lions, thieves, and wolves, and they scare you, and you need prayers for strength. Whatever the case may be, I beg and plead that you come now. Together we stand, and as we sing.
God.